Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour, our roundtable podcast about what we are watching, reading, and listening to. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. This week, it's time for our summer movie preview, where we look ahead to some of the bombs and the boondoggles and the best stuff we expect to see blowing up and being great for the next few months. We'll predict, we'll debate, and we hope you'll leave more psyched and more scared than you are right now. And as always, we'll close the show with what's making us happy this week, so stick around.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. For music games, puzzles, and trivia of all sorts right now, check out Ask Me Another. Play a game of Snack or Whack. Unravel the similarities between Pride and Prejudice and 50 Shades of Grey. And see what you and comedian Wyatt Cenac know about puppets. Ask Me Another is like Trivia Night, but a lot funnier. Play along now at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.
We're all about summer movies this week, but before we get started here in historic Studio 44, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And joining us from our studio in New York is our pal Mike Katziff. Yay! Mike Katziff, what do you do in NPR up there, buddy?
I'm a producer for Ask Me Another, and I write for NPR Music here and there.
You absolutely do. We're so excited to have you with us for the summer movie preview. Now, the way we're going to do this is we're going to go around the table a few times talking about some of the movies that are on our minds. And the first question that we have up for today's show is, what summer movie are you looking forward to seeing the most? I'm going to go first to you, Stephen Thompson.
Well, I often wind up picking something like a big Pixar movie, or maybe something a little thoughtful that might be a change of pace from all the splody building smashy that we sometimes lament. Instead, I decided to talk about Independence Day Resurgence.
Oh, wow.
Now, I realize that there should be some caveats with my excitement about Independence Day Resurgence.
You think?
One is Will Smith is not in this very curiously long-awaited sequel to the massively splody building smashy.
You are really giving that phrase "long-awaited" a workout there.
You are really
stretching it.
It is long-awaited. I mean, Finding Dory, the sequel to Finding Nemo, is a sequel to a movie from 2003.
Mm-hmm.
This is almost a whole decade older than
that.
As we learned last summer, with the kind of staggering success of Jurassic World, there is a gigantic appetite for sequels to movies that fall into a certain kind of Price is Right range game of eras, that nostalgia, there's a nostalgia sweet spot that you can really, really get people in. And now, Independence Day is not a great movie. It is a fun and very, very, very silly movie. Independence Day Resurgence has the same director. It's Roland Emmerich. It is a very, very different cast. There is a little bit of a thread of a kind of a Terminator Genesis style going off the rails of an older franchise. But my whole family loves Independence Day, or at least gathered around and recently had a raucous viewing thereof. And so I know this is kind of the one movie that my kind of increasingly culturally far afield family can kind of come together and enjoy in a very, very silly way, which I expect us to enjoy this movie in that spirit.
What do you think, Glenn? This is a big swing.
This one is a big swing.
Yeah.
It's not. I'm going against a lot of my tendencies.
It's so dumb, that movie. It's so dumb.
It's so good. It's so good.
Okay. All right.
Glenn, you and I are both nerds in our 40s.
Mm-hmm.
When Independence Day came out, we were nerds in college.
Mm-hmm. I was 13 when that movie came out.
And Mike Katziff was 13 when Independence Day came out. And I do think there is a major generational difference also playing out in my house involving how you received that movie when it came out. And I think for people of a certain age, a little younger than you or me, this could be very, very exciting. And I want to glom onto that excitement.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you're not looking so forward to Independence Day coming back, Glenn, what are you looking forward to?
Oh, I went through a bunch. I mean, the Keanu is the Key and Peele movie. I'm looking forward to that. Ghostbusters, I'm looking forward to that, although the trailer didn't really excite me that much. X-Men Apocalypse, I love that franchise because those movies are not bloated churned out, every one of them is weird. Every one of them is kind of messy. There's something idiosyncratic about each one of those films. And I'm looking for that. Star Trek Beyond, I mean, Star Trek went into darkness, and it left me behind when it went into darkness. As much as I love that universe and I love spending time with those characters, if you spend even a second thinking about the plot of Star Trek Into Darkness, it just falls away. Because talk about dumb. That is a dumb plot. Suicide Squad belongs firmly
you
in...
You can't take all the movies.
I was
going
to say, you are listing all the movies. I decided not to do
It's a build-up. I'm building up.
Yeah, I can tell.
It's a ramp-up.
You don't say.
It's called drama. Suicide Squad belongs squarely in the Snyderverse, which means it's not necessarily for me, although they are pumping it up. You know, they're punching it up.
They're trying to add jokes.
Trying to add jokes, which on the surface is a good thing, but it really testifies to how rudderless Warner's feels right now, where they're just constantly overcorrecting and fighting the last battle, and it just feels like there's no real vision there. Even if it's a vision of Zack Snyder's vision, which I don't care for, some consistency there would be good. No, I got layers.
You picked the last movie left in the summer.
The one that I picked is not big, explodey, franchisey. This is, you want in the middle of a hot, sweaty summer, a bolus of weirdness.
A bolus.
You want a little touch.
He said a bolus, by the way.
A smack, a soupçon of weirdness. And so I picked, of course, Swiss Army Man. Now, Swiss Army Man, if you don't know by that name, you might know it by its much stronger SEO term, Daniel Radcliffe's Farting Corpse Movie, which is what it's called across the internet right now. Theoretically, it's Paul Dano, who, by the way, is like the Doctor Who villain, The Silence, is one of those things where when you look away from this guy and you forget he exists. Like, he's one of those kind of actors for me. And when I look back at him, kind of want to punch him. He's got one of those punchable faces. It's a very cliche phrase, punchable face, but I mean, it fits for him. It fits for Miles Teller. There's something about that guy. Maybe because he always plays heels or whatever, but there's something about that guy. So he plays a guy on a desert island who's about to kill himself. He finds Daniel Radcliffe's dead body washed up on the shore, and the dead corpse becomes his best friend, and they go on adventures together.
So Radcliffe's the corpse and Dano's the live guy. Is that correct?
That's correct. And it's directed by Dan Kwan and Daniel Scheinert. They call themselves Daniels. They also directed Turn Down for What, that video. So this is all about farting. It had lots of walkouts at Sundance, as you can imagine, but it also won the Director's Prize at Sundance. Cool. So I am really looking forward to it because the trailer is just bonkers. Weirdness is what I'm looking forward to in the middle of the summer. A little bolus of sort of indie movie weirdness.
All right, Glenn Weldon.
this is all the big hits.
Yeah.
We're trotting out.
This is Welcome to All Movies Considered.
Yep.
Mike Katzeff, tell me what you're looking forward to this summer, bud.
Well, I assume you guys are going to do a gigantic opus on Captain America Civil War. So that's honestly what I'm most looking forward to. So it's a big, colorful, punchy movie with lots of characters, and I think that will be the most fun, and it'll probably, no doubt, there'll be a massive hit. But I want to talk about The Nice Guys, which is sort of in the vein of your typical buddy cop movie. We've seen a million of those, but this is from the guy who kind of invented the classic buddy cop movie, Shane Black. Shane Black, obviously, from Lethal Weapon, he did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and he actually did Iron Man 3, which was sort of a buddy cop movie in some portions, too. Mm-hmm. So this is sort of his return a little bit. It's kind of a spiritual sequel to Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. It has nothing to do with it. It's just sort of in that vein of pulpy. And it has a lot of swagger and a lot of violence. But, like, the key is it looks like it's just packed with, like, fizzy comedy and jokes and a really good chemistry, strangely enough, between Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe. And from what I've sort of gleaned from this trailer, it looks a lot like P.T. Anderson's Boogie Nights meets Steven Soderbergh's Out of Sight, a little bit of Elmore Leonard, Get Shorty sort of vibe to it. Gosling as a private eye. Russell Crowe is sort of this muscle messenger, maybe of the mob, maybe a police enforcer or something like that. They get involved to basically try to track down a mysterious disappearance of this girl and find themselves entangled in, like, this mob conspiracy. And everything about it just looks crackling, it looks fun, it's just tons of jokes and maybe a little bit of stylized hyperviolence and stuff like that too. But, you know, it just has like this vibe to it that I'm really into.
Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
I'm definitely open to enjoying that movie a great deal. Mm-hmm. I think the Lethal Weapon stuff and Shane Black and
Shane Black's had a really, really interesting career. I do wonder, will it have enough farting corpses?
Yeah.
So what I chose, I could have chosen Civil War because I am I am a Marvel movie person tonally. Yeah. I have really enjoyed the Captain America character. I've written about Captain America a couple times. I could have picked that. But what I chose, I did choose Ghostbusters. Now, this is the Ghostbusters sequel that has Melissa McCarthy and Kate McKinnon and Kristen Wiig and Leslie Jones. And it's directed by Paul Feig and, you know, lots of good stuff in terms of people who've been associated with a bunch of movies that I have really liked. I agree with Glenn that the trailer is not hilarious to me, but there are movies where it's hard to make a hilarious trailer.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure if I thought the trailer of Spy was as funny as Spy turned out to be to me. You know, I'm withholding judgment in that way. I think the other thing that has been sticking in craws about this Ghostbusters, which I definitely get, is that Leslie Jones is playing the one of these characters who's not a scientist. Mm. She's kind of the one who says, I'm not a scientist, but I know New York. And so you have the black actress in the role of being kind of the street smart person. And that, you know, pings things for people, obviously, quite a bit. At the same time, Leslie Jones, as I understand it, kind of came back from that and sort of said, don't do me any favors. And there's a really difficult dynamic there where she's being cast at the style of comedy that, to me, she tends to do on SNL when she's writing characters for herself. It's a really, really tricky question. I don't have an answer for it even in my own head, but I'm excited to see the movie. It was so sad and interesting and complicated to see this trailer in a bunch of trailers that I saw together. Maybe when I saw Batman vs. Superman, she was one of the only black people that showed up in any of those trailers in a significant role at all. And it's weird. It's a complicated thing. But if I sort of assume that you're going to have these actresses do styles of comedy, beyond that question, I really am psyched about this combination of people. Yeah. I am very much pro Melissa McCarthy, particularly when she works with Paul Feig. I think that's been a really kind of magical combination. I think he respects her and gets the best out of her. It's just one of the, we did a whole show about director actor kind of combinations that was around his work with her, actually.
Think about how bleak the last few summer movie seasons would be without The Heat and Spy.
This is the other thing that I was going to say. And Mike is right that this Gosling Crow movie is also a comedy. But one thing that is often missing from these big summer movie seasons is big comedies. Yeah. And so I'm psyched to see a good big comedy. That's the hope. And so my pick is Ghostbusters.
Especially compared to, like, Neighbors 2 is probably the other big blockbuster-y comedy that will probably make a lot of money. But I would so much rather see Ghostbusters. No offense to Seth Rogen, who I usually like in most things, even his lesser things.
I had no
things,
idea there was a Neighbors 2 and still suddenly saw the trailer, and I was like, what?
Well, but I do think there is this hunger. And you look at how movies like Spy and Bridesmaids and, you know, recent summer movie hits, very often the kind of quote-unquote surprise hits have tons and tons of jokes in them. I think even Guardians of the Galaxy falls into this. I think summer movie audiences are starved for a little less seriousness, and I think so many summer movies, including some of the ones that we're going to talk about in later segments, have a grimness to them or look like they have a grimness to them that I find, you know, thudding and off-putting after a while.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, that's sort of been the story about Deadpool, too, is like for all like the talk about the hyperviolence, I think most people really latched on to the jokes of that. And I think that's what all the talk about Suicide Squad, all the reshoots that they're putting into that, is that they're trying to maybe separate themselves from the grimness of Batman versus Superman and try to infuse a little bit more of the humor that that movie in theory could have.
Yeah.
Boy, if Batman v Superman causes a course correction, I will not be disappointed.
Yeah. No, sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, those are the movies that we are most looking forward to. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Boondoggles, possibly. We're going to talk about movies we expect to make a lot of money. So come right back.
Support for this podcast comes from PBS, featuring the national parks by filmmaker Ken Burns. Meet the pioneers who first explored these wild places and the people who fought to preserve them. From Acadia to Yosemite, Yellowstone to the Grand Canyon, the Everglades to the gates of the Arctic. Discover how we're not only connected to this land, we're connected by it. Celebrating the 100th anniversary of our national parks. The six-part documentary starts Monday, April 25th at 9, 8 Central on PBS.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. We are talking this week about summer movies. And the next question that we wanted to ask, we've already talked about what we're most excited to see. Now we're moving to the business end. Yeah. We're going to talk about what we expect to make the most money. This is where we make just some predictions. We're often wrong, but we're going to just lay down some predictions. Stephen Thompson, what do you think is the summer movie that's going to make the most money?
I really agonized over this. Like, they really managed to wedge a lot of big money properties into this span of about 2 months, making it kind of hard to pick. A little part of me wanted to pick the Steven Spielberg movie The BFG, in part because I think it's going for a little bit of that E.T. thing, in part because I can envision a lead in a story about the box office that says, the BFG is a BFD! At the box office, that is!
Uh-huh.
But I don't think that's necessarily... I don't want to base my choice on that.
I hope not.
You know, there are some big cartoon properties that are bound to do well. They've only been flogging The Secret Life of Pets for about 8 years now. There are many franchises coming back. You've mentioned X-Men and Star Trek. You know, Suicide Squad certainly could do well in the late summer. But I'm just swinging for a big, fat double right up the middle. And I'm just saying Captain America Civil War. I think that you have a combination of factors that is going to lead that to being one of the biggest and most box office massive superhero movies yet in that Marvel universe. You have not only that perfect first weekend in May placement that like the Iron Man movies and the Avengers movies have gotten. I think the last Captain America movie had a lot of people excited for a sequel. And I think you can't discount the level of disappointment in the quality and the tone of Batman v Superman, which, you know, even the millions of people who saw it tended to walk out wishing it had been a different kind of movie. And the sense I get, the early reviews, as you mentioned, Glenn, have been very, very positive. This just feels to me like a juggernaut and the kind of thing that can be a tone setter that just keeps it dominating in theaters for many weeks.
Right. The fact that it's coming out at the very beginning also helps a lot.
Absolutely. That's a really prime spot. That tends to be, you know, one thing you see in a lot of summer movie previews in the media is they tend to land around that first weekend in May. And one of the reasons we kind of moved it up is it feels like the summer movie season is coming earlier and earlier and earlier. Batman v Superman felt like a summer movie. But that still, that first weekend in May is kind of a pole position kind of weekend.
Yeah. Well, I think Stephen took the easy one.
What I did. Absolutely. That was just a straight meatball pitch up the middle.
What about you, Glenn? What are you picking?
I think it's got to be Finding Dory. I mean, it's the sequel to one of the most successful and beloved of all films. This isn't Cars 2, okay?
No.
This is the sequel to Finding Nemo. And this is, it's you talk about your quadrants, hit them all. Because parents don't have to think. Parents can go and see it for themselves. They can also bring the kids, know what they're getting in for. People who were kids when Finding Nemo came out will go back. I think there might be a blind spot, or at least there might be a window where people wouldn't be interested, which would be, I guess, kids your kids' age, Stephen.
12 and 15.
12, they might think they're too old for this, right?
Maybe.
Yeah. But that's it. Everybody else in the universe is going to want to see this movie. It's going to look great. We haven't really seen too much from it yet. They're kind of holding it back.
The trailers look pretty plain, plot-wise. It looks kind of more rehashy than...
But, I mean, they're just cashing in on this. Now, if we're talking domestic box office, I do agree that Civil War will probably clean up overseas because it's big explodey. But, I mean, I think this movie is just... The time is right for this thing. So that's my pick, Finding Dory. Which is, you know, coming out opposite... Swiss Army Man, so
fingers crossed.
Got your fingers crossed there.
Might be buried by Daniel Radcliffe's farting corpse movie. But I believe in it.
Fair enough.
Lucky
fair enough.
Young start.
All right, how about you, Mike? What do you think?
So I was going to say Civil War as well, but I do have a couple thoughts about why that feels like the most obvious choice.
I also wanted to win.
Yeah, well, sure. But there's something to the fact that this both feels like a culmination of what's come before, which I think compared to what DC has been doing, where they're basically jumpstarting it with the franchise all together at once, compared to Marvel, where they've kind of slowly, methodically put these pieces in place. This also feels like it's the jumping off point to what Kevin Feige, who runs Marvel, is calling like their phase three. And this might be the last time we see a lot of these characters sharing screen together, probably until the next big Avengers movie, which is at this point 3 or 4 years away with the Avengers Infinity War. This basically implies that like all these characters are all going to fight and go their separate ways and have their own solo adventures until they have to team up again. I think the other thing that probably will make a lot of money, I think the surprise hit will actually probably be Suicide Squad.
Mm. Can imagine that.
Even though it's adjacent to the Zack Snyder universe, I think David Ayer is actually trying to do something that's a little bit more bizarre.
Right.
Yeah. And I think DC sort of wants to, in theory, do things with like a variety of tone. They have yet to prove that they can do that. But I think because you have Will Smith, Margot Robbie, Cara Delevingne, and let's not discount Jared Leto, I think there's... It's a very strange...
Let's do.
I mean, look, I think people have a curiosity with what he's going to do with that thing. It's not my take that I would prefer that he does. Mm-hmm. I think every still photo that I've seen of that guy is weird and off-putting. But there's a curiosity sake, I think, that people are really interested in. I also think there's, as I sort of mentioned before, the fact that they're spending so much money, like an unprecedented amount of money, to retool... and reshoot. So who knows? It might benefit from like the post Deadpool thing where, you know, it might add some levity and some craziness to it that makes it actually sort of fun to watch. I don't know that I'll see it, but I think a lot of people will probably connect with it.
Yeah. So I think you're right about that. And I think as I give my pick, I will just say, I think Civil War is the only like rational pick. I think it's the only like... I think if you look at the actual landscape and you really, like if I were really betting all of my own money, you got to bet on Civil War. The other thing is the one I'm not going to pick that I could pick is the Independence Day movie. The reason why you might pick the Independence Day movie is Jurassic World.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jurassic World is the one that when we did this once before, we knew it would make money. We underestimated just how big it was going to be because we underestimated the force of essentially generationally delayed nostalgia.
Oh, totally.
And I think it's one thing to say, like, look, people love these Marvel movies. They're going to come back. But like Glenn said with Finding Dory, you can think of the new Independence Day movie as Finding Dory for people who like explosions. So I think there is a chance that the big surprise is going to be that the Independence Day movie
completely.
Is going to make $600 million.
If it had Will Smith, I would feel more confident in that.
So there's one possibility. I ultimately made my pick based on sort of acknowledging that I think I'm going to lose. So I tried to find a movie that I thought might perform better than its, you know, considerable expectations.
It's called Swiss Army Man.
Which, again, I went with Ghostbusters. Now, the reason why I'm invested in this movie making money, you got to go back to Bridesmaids.
Yeah,
and you have to remember, when Bridesmaids was coming out, there was sort of a social media movement among women kind of saying, go see it. Go see it with your friends. Make sure it doesn't flop so hard that they refuse to ever make a silly comedy with women in it ever again, right? So then they do that. And it's a hit, and it makes a ton of money, and it's not incredibly expensive. Then they make The Heat, and it makes a ton of money, and it's not incredibly expensive, and it's extremely profitable. I have to assume those things are also really good on the long tail, kind
totally.
Of on-demand,
cable,
all that stuff streaming. That comes from people kind of not just watching it once, but being willing to watch and rewatch. What I am waiting for is the one that's like not just big, but like mega big, that takes this comedy stuff and crosses it over into kind of even more blockbustery comedy stuff, like action comedy territory, like the Fast and the Furious movies and stuff like that. I'm just saying I'm rooting for that movie to be in a even maybe a different level than it's supposed to be, simply because... I would like it. People now, only a handful of years later, people essentially take for granted. If you said now, like, well, are people really going to go see a movie, a comedy with a bunch of women in it? You don't get very far with that conversation. And you did when they were putting out Bridesmaids. You did. Yeah. Will people really go to see a silly, vulgar comedy with women in it? Oh, I don't know. Let's ask our panel of dudes. It was a very frustrating conversation to observe. I'm super happy that we don't have it anymore. And I would love this movie to just make so ridiculously much money that all these people can make whatever they want forever. The end.
I guess one thing that I wonder about Ghostbusters in general and why there's so much hand-wringing about it why Ghostbusters and not any of the like 90 other reboots? Like, why is Ghostbusters sacred and Spider-Man isn't, or Star Trek isn't? Or
if they made Spider-Chick, there would be
is it really as simple as that?
Sadly, I think there is a point that people are angry because it's not the original people coming back.
Yeah.
I think it's as simple as that. And people were mad at Star Trek when that wasn't the original people, and that's why they threw Leonard Nimoy in there. I mean, it just keeps happening where a certain sect of people say, this thing is my precious, and anything you do to it is going to ruin it, because they've seen that happen with other franchises.
You know, y'all might not remember this, but there actually is an episode of a fine podcast called Pop Culture Happy Hour that is about this very thing, why some franchises provoke this kind of response and other ones don't. So we will link to that on the blog at npr.org/monkey see.
I was going to say, we should do a whole episode about that.
Yes, exactly right. We did.
I should start listening to this show.
I know. That's probably an episode you produced, so I'd understand it would make sense that you weren't listening. All right. Now we have done what we're most excited about seeing, what we think is going to make the most money, and now we're going to go to possible boondoggles, which is a category we've had some fun with in the past, if not unerring accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Thompson, when you look ahead, where do you see the possibility of boondoggles?
I feel weirdly confident about this pick. Cost $180 million. Coming out July 1st. It's a little movie called The Legend of Tarzan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you may or may not have seen the trailers for The Legend of Tarzan. It looks unbelievably expensive.
Who's in it?
Alexander Sarsgaard is the titular jungle man.
Uh-huh.
Christoph Waltz is in it.
Playing a Nazi.
He is the baddie. And to me, it has like all of the main DNA of so many boondoggles of summers past. It combines two very scary things. One is it is very expensive, and one is it looks very, very old-fashioned.
Yeah.
And if you look at past boondoggles like The Lone Ranger,
mm-hmm.
You look at a movie like Cutthroat Island from 20 or so years ago. John Carter is an example of this. I would say Pan falls into this category a little bit.
Interesting points you're making.
Now there are exceptions to this rule. I mean, I would not have expected that a Planet of the Apes remake would do as well as it did. I would not necessarily expect Pirates of the Caribbean to do as well as that series did. But what a lot of these big, boondoggly $200 million catastrophes have in common is they are old-fashioned. And there's a sense of, like, rebooting Tarzan in this way. It's not that there haven't been successful Tarzan iterations. Disney had a successful animated one a decade or so ago. But there's a feeling for this of, like, we decided to make a $200 million movie based on the comic strip Prince Valiant.
Yeah.
You know? Or like, Gasoline Alley or Crazy Cat.
What do the kids love today?
What do the kids love?
Tarzan.
The kids are just dying to see a live-action version of Pogo. You know, it feels...
Handicap the series.
It feels very old-fashioned. And this movie has, I think, what will turn out to be the supreme misfortune of coming out just a few months after The Jungle Book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And whether that movie...
People
are liking it. It looks... It's visually... really something else. Mm-hmm. I talked to Bob Mondello about this earlier today, and he was talking about how he watched the whole thing, and then at the end, there were just a few lines in the credits that basically said, in effect, shot on a soundstage in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you watch the entire movie, and you assume that it has been shot in very far-flung mm-hmm. locales, and that basically the only thing that is live action is the boy.
Right.
The uncanny valley, the one thing you can't simulate.
Right.
It is essentially an animated movie. Watch the trailer and tell yourself, this is an animated movie.
Yeah.
That's really, really remarkable that mm-hmm. it's kind of taking that Life of Pi style, how on earth did they not use a real tiger to blah,
right.
blah, blah. Anyway, that's The Jungle Book.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to come out a few months after The Jungle Book, and I think inevitably be compared to it. And my bold prediction,
mm-hmm.
I predict that The Legend of Tarzan will be outperformed in the box office on its first week by another movie opening that same weekend, The Purge Election Year. That is how committed I am to saying I do not think that this $180 million Tarzan reboot is going to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty committed.
Yep.
It's pretty committed. All right, Glenn, boondoggle.
This isn't a financial boondoggle, but it's sort of a psychological boondoggle.
Sure.
Four words, four simple words. Absolutely fabulous.
Mm.
The movie. 1992 was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. That's when the first series came out. There have been five seasons, which doesn't sound like much, only 39 episodes, but a lot of hour-long specials, a lot of anniversary specials, comic relief sketches, an offshoot called Mirrorball, of which we will not talk. And, you know, Jennifer Saunders, Joanna Lumley are fantastic. That premise is fantastic. But coming back over and over and over as many times as it has, there comes a time when you just want to say, Dayenu, that's enough. We're good. That'll do, pig. You just want to say, stop.
Yeah.
Just stop.
Yeah.
I hope I'm wrong about this. I hope it's funny. But, and there are certain things that are arguing against it not being any good. A, anxiety about aging, about being out of touch, is kind of the engine of that entire
right.
series.
Right.
That's
yeah.
what it's built on. So if it plays with that, there's some hope. The other thing is that it's always interesting to see it come back when it comes back and intersect the culture of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Will there be Snapchat jokes?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there will be some Snapchat jokes in this thing. And the problem is, seeing it happen over the course of six or seven episodes, you feel a sameness. By condensing it all into an hour and a half, let's hope, maybe you don't get tired
yeah.
of that. Maybe you just get that fresh smack of, like, here they are intersecting the zeitgeist now. You look around, and then the film's over. The wild card, and the thing I'm fascinated by, is that for the first time, we are going to see these two characters without a laugh track.
Mm.
We have never seen them without a laugh track. And, you know, of course, it's a studio audience.
Sure.
But there is something about that laugh track which is just, it is, you expect Brits to be kind of reserved, but, you know, Adina Monsoon falls out of a cab and you can hear people's lungs falling out of their mouth.
Yeah.
That laughter is just crazy.
Yeah.
And it works on you in a weird way. Intellectually, of course, you realize that you have your own judgment of what's funny or not. But
yeah.
when you think back on it, in your reptilian forebrain, you remember that huge laughter and you think the show is funnier than it was.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing that happens. So sitting in a movie theater, watching all these antics.
Without cueing laughter.
Without yeah. cueing laughter. Yeah. Without that kind of bust-a-gut cueing
mm-hmm.
laughter. I'm just curious. I think they're both very funny people. She's a fantastic writer. Enough.
Yeah. Interesting.
Just enough.
Interesting. All right. Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Mike Katzeff, give me a boondoggle.
Sure. So I'm going to list what sounds on paper like a pretty good cast of people. You got Peter Dinklage. You have Bill Hader, Kate McKinnon, Jason Sudeikis, Keegan-Michael Key, Ike Barinholtz, Josh Gad, Maya Rudolph, Hannibal Buress, Gillian Bell, Tony Hale, blah, blah, blah. That sounds like it should be awesome.
Yeah.
Until you know it's Angry Birds.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And look, I would probably be one of those people before the Lego movie came out who said, there's no way that movie's going to be good.
Right.
It looks fun,
right.
but there's no way like that thing, which is clearly trying to sell a mm-hmm. product, which is
sure.
Legos, is going to tell a real story that has any substance beyond, look at all these things.
Yeah.
Angry Birds, however, is clearly a cynical move to sell a iPhone video game. I shouldn't have a problem with that. That's, I mean, Civil War is going to sell action figures.
Right,
and
sure.
Teenage Mutant Turtles is going to sell action figures and whatever.
But it's based on an app.
It's based on an app that is a game that kind of has no story.
Right.
So you're infusing a story and characters into basically a function of a game where you're flinging these things at these other things and hoping to, like, knock down a tower or whatever.
That doesn't sound like a great movie to you?
Honestly, like, watching the trailer, which is as much as I was able to sort of, like, absorb this thing.
Right.
They're immediately trying to infuse character into, I guess, the lead character, which is that red bird, and showing that in his childhood he was picked on or he wasn't the cool person, he was ignored, and clearly at some point that character is going to live up to his potential or people are going to finally see him as bigger than himself. That's like as most played out as I've seen in most trailers. They're also introducing like these pigs that I guess are invaders, which gives them a reason to knock them down.
Mm-hmm.
But all you're really waiting for, I think, as an audience member, is the point where it's the most like the video game, where I'm sure these birds are going to learn how to fling themselves at these pigs
yeah.
to defeat these pigs. And you know how it's going to end, and so you're spending all this time infusing fake characterization and plotline to basically just get to the point where the audience is like, oh yeah, that's like that game that I play when I'm
right.
waiting for the subway or the bus or
yeah.
whatever. It sounds super cynical. This movie could make so much money because it's not geared towards me. It's
sure.
geared
sure.
towards children, and parents are going to take their kids to that because it's probably very inoffensive. But it seems of the children's movies that are coming out this year or family-friendly
yeah.
movies, the most sort of cynical
yeah.
merchandisey of the things that I've seen.
Gotcha.
And they have marketed this movie. Yeah. I feel like I have seen this trailer 20 times, and it's not funny.
Yeah. So Mike picked a video game movie. I also picked a video game movie.
Oh, I bet I know what you picked.
To me, this is the meatball pitch over the plate
of this category. This was my runner-up in this category.
And that is Warcraft.
Yep.
Now, the reason for that is not, I think movies based on video games are stupid. It is not, I think video games are stupid. It is not people who like video games or movies based on video games are stupid. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with looking at the trailer and feeling like it was utterly soulless. It felt to me like the weighted average of every other movie like this. It did not feel like it had a story. It felt like it was made on, 100 whiteboards. You feel the meetings. There's a certain kind of movie where you feel the meetings all the time. Actually, the interesting thing about video games for people is that they transport you. They are kind of, infused with imagination and all of this stuff. So when you make them, and I think there is some history of this in films based on video games, that when you make them, if they don't really bring that with them, they can really just sit and underperform and underwhelm people. I just feel like its bigness and and the flatness of that trailer to me, the fact that it just seemed like, rah, go fight, people hitting each other. I just felt like it was nothing people who have played a game like that haven't already seen.
Yeah, the risk in a movie like that is it's like watching a playthrough.
Right, exactly.
Like, it's like you are watching a successfully played game of World of Warcraft, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Part of what made it seem like a boondoggle to me is it still looks really expensive.
Yeah,
Is there star power behind it? Is there humor in it? Is there, what is really like the grabber? Unless you are a big fan of this game and are looking to see that world made bigger.
Right. But is that really what my question is, are you really giving the people who want this movie what it is that they want?
Right.
That's my question. And so my pick for Boondoggle is Warcraft.
Very good pick.
All right. When we come back, we're going to get to our favorite segment of this week and every week, what is making us happy this week. So stick around and come right back.
Support for Pop Culture Happy Hour comes from LearnVest. LearnVest is an online financial advice company focused on empowering people nationwide to make smart decisions with their money. If you want to know how aggressively to pay down your student loans, LearnVest can help with that. If you want to know how much you should put aside for saving or contribute to your retirement account, yep, they're on it. They'll create a custom financial plan. Plus, they pair you with a financial planner to help keep you on track. To see a sample plan and get a $50 credit, go to learnvest.com/happy.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What is making us happy this week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
Just last week on Pop Culture Happy Hour, our pal Audie Cornish mentioned that she had finally gotten into Instagram and was recommending a few feeds that she was really enjoying. As I was sitting behind the little glass window watching this conversation play out, I just got on Instagram too and have been enjoying starting to play around with it. I like to think that I am just always just staying exactly 5 years behind.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All technology at all time. Give it 5 years. If it's still around in 5 years, I'm all in. I've been having fun with it so far. All I've used it for is shooting pictures of Tiny Desk concerts in which I stand behind Bob Boylan and let him block the band. I don't know how long I will continue to ride that particular joke.
Maybe forever? Can it just be forever?
Possibly forever. I have too many cats to allow it to be nothing but pictures of Bob Boylan at the Tiny Desk. But if you are interested in, for whatever reason, in following me, I am like I am everywhere else at I Dislike Steven. The other thing is there's this new Bob's Burgers cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
And it is full of recipes on how to make some of the fake burgers that you see listed on the board over the counter at Bob's Burgers restaurant. And so it seems like it would be a silly kind of just cash in for Bob's Burgers. But just starting with the introduction, it's just it's written by the people who do the show. Yeah.
Well, the thing about the introduction is it is by Lauren Bouchard. And so he talks about how these recipes are actually a peek inside Bob's brain.
Right.
They're a way to kind of see that this guy has some gastronomical, like, ambition.
Yes.
When you think about it like that, it kind of adds a whole layer to this joke cookbook.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And that, like, there are culinary risks being taken. It comes up again and again in the show. You know, he has, like, this dad who only does diner food a certain way. Mm-hmm. And that Bob, being, like, 1/20th a plucky dreamer, mm-hmm. that he has some of those same ambitions. And to fan out from there, I mean, what has really been making me happy in the last week or two is just how much time I have spent watching Bob's Burgers. Mm-hmm. I'm just marinating in that whole franchise, and now I'm in its book spinoff, Bob's Burgers and Everything It Entails.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
So the thing that's making me happy is not so much the thing that I'm going to talk about, but the discussion that I hope emerges around it, which is Wonder Woman Earth One, and it's by Grant Morrison with art by Yannick Paquette. It's basically a reiteration of the Wonder Woman story. Morrison has done a lot of research on the character, and he has decided that what he wants to do is bring out a lot of the subtext that's been around the character for a long time. The queer subtext is now text. The feminist subtext, which if you think she's always been feminist, you just have to read the comic.
Go back to read the comic.
The idea of Wonder Woman has always been feminist. The character has not until relatively recently. So he also went back and really reimagined according to her creator's weird kinks. So all the stuff that's in there about bondage and loving submission and chains and shackles and ropes, that's in this thing too, in a big old way. He has reimagined Paradise Island. Recently, it's been more like a warrior women place. And he's gone back to the original conception of it as this scientific utopia, except that they're all kind of lesbian supermodel scientific utopians. Mm-hmm. And Bitch Planet is a comic I've talked about before, which is so good because it's taking a lot of the exploitation stuff, but it's coming at it from a women's perspective, clearly a women's perspective. This is taking a lot of this feminist, queer, bondage stuff. It's still the male gaze. It's still so much. All these scenes of the Amazons lounging on Paradise Island in, you know, gowns, it's just such cheesecake art. It's well-executed cheesecake art, but it doesn't reimagine it as much as I think he wants it to. I think what you got here is like a lesbian scene in a straight porn film. That's what it feels like. It doesn't feel like it's a true reimagining. There is a great Wonder Woman story to tell someday. I'd love for it to be told by a woman. And Gail Simone and other people have really told good stories. But as far as the definitive thing, there's something a little too languid and cheesecakey about this particular instrument. But it's fascinating, and I just want to talk to people about it to see if they're getting what I'm getting. That's Wonder Woman Earth 1.
Very good. Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Mike Katzeff, what's making you happy this week, bud?
Well, I think the moment I get out of Independence Day Resurgence, I'm going to put on my headphones and put on a Weezer record because the 90s are back.
Yes.
And if you had told me when I was 13 that Weezer had just put out one of its best records in 2016, I'd say, yeah, that makes sense because Weezer just put out the Blue Album and that record is awesome. Since the Blue Album and kind of Pinkerton, Weezer has sort of gone on a long string of records that have varying levels of quality. And
to put it mildly.
Yeah. So about 18 months ago, Weezer returned with a record called Everything Will Be All Right in the End. It was produced by Rick Ocasek. That record was considered sort of a quote-unquote return to form. It actually had more hooks and it was brighter. Mm-hmm. It actually had something to say in a way that Rivers Cuomo, the lead singer, has not for a while. A couple weeks ago, Weezer returned again, and it actually seemed like a very quick return for Weezer. They put out another self-titled record, which is now being called the White Album. And I've been obsessed with this record in a way that I haven't really since the Blue Album. I've been listening to this record over and over again, and there's something about it that I think I even like more than Pinkerton, and that's actually probably a very controversial thing to say. There's something about the way that Rivers Cuomo finally maybe is able to take the things that we loved about those early records, the sort of earnestness, the self-awareness, the wit, and a little bit of like the charm and like the melodies and the bright ways that the band plays, kind of this surfer rock, grungy sort of thing. But it doesn't feel like they're trying to retread on that either. It actually feels very much of the now. It feels like a lot of bands who are sort of doing a lot of the same thing that they did. Best Coast or Cayetana, some of these mm-hmm. newer bands are sort of doing a Weezer-ish thing. The loop has sort of come around, but it doesn't feel like them grasping at what the kids like. So here's a song that I want to play. It's called Jacked Up. It's near the end of the record, and it has a bit of like Beatles and Beach Boys harmony that we haven't heard from this band in a while. This is kind of the song that I just keep playing over and over again. We'll sleep together. yeah, so that's Jacked Up by Weezer. It's off the White Album, or Weezer, in parentheses, the White Album. Go buy it. I don't know that I would have said go buy a Weezer record right now, but it's amazing, and I look forward to their next return to form in 2018.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike Katzeff. So before I get into my happy, we wanted to let you know we've got a couple weeks left sending out the show a day early on NPR One, which is NPR's app. And you find it by doing a search for Pop Culture Happy Hour. That is how you find it a day early. If you have given it a try, thank you. And we have decided that in May, we are going to send out a little special thank you to those of you who have the app. It will be available exclusively on the app. And what we're going to do is we're going to answer some questions. We're going to do a little mailbag segment. And in order to answer a few questions, we need to get a few questions. And the way that you get your questions to us is that you email us at pchh@npr.org. pchh@npr.org. Pretty easy, right? So we hope that you will enjoy it, and we hope that you will send us some questions. Now, my actual happy this week is a sort of a complex two-parter. The first part is that there was an announcement that came out last week that Television Without Pity, the site that I wrote for a very long time, is potentially being worked on again for a potential relaunch by its current owners, Tribune Media. Now, I have no idea what that would bring. It is certainly not going to bring, to my knowledge, anyone who ever had anything to do with it before. So it is more like a reboot than a sequel or a continuation. But I am always happy to see anywhere that is going to be potentially a place for people to write. It's certainly something that I loved. And it does make me happy to think that perhaps other young writers will find their way there again. However, really making me happy this week is the fact that if you miss Television Without Pity, as many of you know, the founders of that site, as well as many of the writers who originally worked there, are in fact still doing their thing at Previously.tv. Yeah. And the original way that the Television Without Pity began was conversations between Sarah Bunting and Tara Ariano about Beverly Hills 90210. Now, as you know, I have mentioned this before, I'm a huge fan of their Beverly Hills 90210 episode-by-episode podcast, which is called Again With This. And the reason I'm bringing this up now again is that just as there is the possibility that Television Without Pity is going to restart, Again With This has reached the Beverly Hills 90210 episodes where they go to the prom and Donna gets drunk and she almost doesn't graduate and then there's a protest. And if you know this show, you know these are very important episodes. Just as this thing happens with that site potentially being relaunched, we are all circling back to the beginning where it is, as it always must be, Sarah and Tara talking about Beverly Hills 90210, which is the heart and soul of that site and their new site and my career. And therefore, it is a wonderful time to go all the way back to the beginning, even if you have not been following the Again With This podcast. It is time for Donna Martin Graduates. Just listen to it. That's all I'm going to say.
This show would not exist.
As you have said, as I have said, there's a shape to this that makes a certain strange kind of sense. And that is what is making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen and Glenn at GH Weldon. You can follow Mike as always. Mike is our esteemed producer emeritus and music director, as well as our fourth chair this week. And you can follow him at Mike Katzeff, KATZIF. You can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy. And Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you are tapping your foot to right now. So thanks so much to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us up in New York, Mike, and thanks to all of you for listening. We'll see you right back here next week.